welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. I stumbled over the name. I'm like three seconds in, and I'm like,
it's the heat.
It's the heat. Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, July 9th, 2013. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Yeah, so, like, we have a show. We're going to talk about Snowden and all the things surrounding Snowden that happened since our last show. There are airplanes and offers of asylum and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, Egypt is blowing up and all that kind of stuff. I do want to mention first, I posted this online, but earlier today I officially adopted my daughter Amy, so I'm very happy about that.
Great, congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, it's been the effective reality for almost 10 years now. Not quite 10, but almost 10 years now. I think the time that she effectively moved in with me would be 10 years ago later this year. So it's been effectively reality for a long, long time.
But now
it's legal too. Now at this point, it's almost exclusively symbolic since she turns 18 in like 3 months, but still it's a good thing to do. So we're happy. Thank you.
I could see that she was very happy
in the picture.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it worked out well. Now, of course, someone on Facebook in the comments joked that, hey, now that this happened, your first official act can be to ground her.
Yes.
And, of course, we came home and did exactly that. But, you know, hey, another story.
Oh, that's okay. It wasn't at the behest of the
Oh, no, it was exclusively because that guy suggested it on Facebook. Did we need another reason?
Oh, yeah, of course.
No, there was something else going on, I won't get into the details here. But, soon as we got home, first order of business, family meeting to decide what to do. So, yes, she's grounded for a few weeks for a little something that happened earlier. But
there you go. I'm trying to think. I was never grounded. Okay.
Maybe I should have been.
not like there weren't probably a whole bunch of good reasons for it, but I think that I was like fourth, child out of four. And
they're like, whatever. Do whatever the hell you want.
Yes. I mean, I will say that, there was stuff that my brothers and sisters, they would do. My oldest dude, they would get them into trouble. Whatever. Okay, got a baby crying.
Okay, we'll take a quick break while Yvonne deals with his baby. We'll be back and talk about Snowden and Egypt and fun stuff like that.
Daddy.
Yes, guys.
Can I go downstairs and see the window?
Well, I'm talking to Yvonne right now. He had to go and take care of his baby for a couple minutes, but he's waiting for me to come back.
Yeah,
he is waiting for me to come back. Well, I'm waiting for him to come back. He's taking care of his baby because his baby woke up and was crying.
Why?
Oh, he probably just was hungry or something.
Yeah, but
he's been naughty.
Have you been naughty?
No. He was stealing my blanket. He jumped on the chair
when
my computer was on it.
No, I need to stay up here because Yvonne could be back any time now.
Yeah, but...
Is it recording?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Daddy...
Mm-hmm?
I'm going to show you one out of water.
What ran out of water?
Come on, let me show you.
Did Roscoe's bowl run out of water?
No. Come on.
Did you run out of water?
Yeah,
well, tell Amy and Mommy, because I got to stay up here right now.
Alex, why don't we go put you in this bunny suit?
Ooh, that sounds good.
I'll send you pics.
Hey!
Ivan, Ivan, Ivan. Still doing baby?
Yep.
Hey.
Okay, all right.
Ah. All set?
Yeah, he's back to sleep. I don't know. You woke up. He was playing his music box. The thing. I don't know. He wanted to sleep, but now he's asleep.
Okay.
So, there you go. All right.
Okay, let's get going again. I guess one last thing to say on the adoption stuff. It was a fairly painless process for us because we're married. It was a step-parent adoption. I know for other people who are adopting externally, just adopting other kids, it can be a very long, involved process. But it went really smoothly. We did have to have the social service interview where they came to our house and inspected and sort of talked to us for an hour. But, you know, we remarkably passed. I don't know how that happened, but.
Well, they didn't know about all your drug habits, but it's yeah, okay. Well, I mean, and you know, yeah. And the illegal like murder and assassination techniques, but that's okay. Yeah,
they didn't look in the crawl space. What can I say?
Well, good for you. Congratulations.
That is, of course, I am kidding, everybody.
Yes, we are kidding. There's nothing
in my crawl space. Although I did see.
I mean, there may be some bugs and some dust.
I did go down there once a while ago, and there was a dead rodent.
Oh, good grief.
That was exciting. I haven't been down there since, actually. But, you know, if anybody who knows me, I am so not the, you know, drugs and alcohol type.
You know? No, he is not.
No. I have had, for the last few years, the extent of my consumption of any substances of that sort have been about a thimble full of champagne at New Year's once a year.
A thimble.
Like maybe a sip. A little bit more than a sip, maybe. Yeah. And I think I didn't even do that. Like last year, I think it wasn't even... Actually, I think it's been a couple years since it was actual champagne. I think the last couple years it's been like sparkling grape juice or something.
There you go.
So, and that's it. You know, so... And I haven't even had like caffeinated beverages in over a year and a half now.
Wait a minute, you stopped drinking caff? Wow.
We talked February 2012 was the last time I had a caffeinated beverage.
Wow. I haven't cut.
Now that's not to say I haven't had caffeine of any sort. Like I've had chocolate and chocolate has caffeine.
I haven't cut alcohol or caffeine.
No, you've probably increased them.
You know, I had a surge on the caffeines after the baby was born, but I have gone back down again on it. I've kind of gotten used to his schedule, and I'm okay with it right now, but it was there for a while where it was, you know, I'd be waking up a couple of times at night in freaking office. I mean, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, gosh, I'm not going to make it out of here unless I have another cup of coffee.
Well, yeah, and I thought, like, it would be a, yeah. Because I was at the point I was drinking tons of this stuff, and so I thought it would be a big deal. But no, after the first couple weeks, it's like, you know, there is a withdrawal period. But after that, I was like, I haven't missed the stuff. I have had an occasional soda, just not something with caffeine.
Now, I mean, of course, I drank I don't recall you drinking coffee when we were in college.
I did not. I had my first taste of coffee ever when a certain roommate of mine tricked me into having it around age 22.
I think my first cup of coffee, I started drinking coffee regularly, I'm going to say when I was like 16. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so no, I, you know, but I actually, Here's the thing. I have a philosophy about how I drink my coffee, okay? There's specific things. I go and I drink coffee in the morning, okay? All right? And I drink a specific amount that I do. I do 3 shots of espresso in my coffee machine in the morning, okay? And normally I will try to – what I try to do right now is I have that and I have one after lunch and I don't have any more coffee. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have sodas afterwards?
You know, some days if I feel tired, I do. Some days I don't. Sometimes I try to have soda at lunch.
It's obviously different, but it's this chemically, it's the same kind of.
No. I understand. Okay. But what I'm saying is that I will usually have only soda at lunch, but I don't have sodas I don't have sodas at the office like during the day or not in the afternoon. Now, sometimes on the weekends or stuff, instead of since I have coffee in the morning, during the day, I'll drink, during lunch, I'll drink soda. But tonight, I don't know why. I felt really tired today. Actually, I didn't sleep very well last night. So I had actually some late sodas, which normally I don't. I usually will have water or wine, but not, and that's not even every day. I mean, wine usually I try to keep have on a Friday or a Saturday, something like that. But I try to I like to have my caffeinated drinks. I'll have them I try to have any of them, before 3 o'clock in the day. And I try to have it just with lunch or, with breakfast and that's it. And I try to avoid having any caffeinated drink in the middle, unless I'm it's been a night where it's been rough. I just hadn't slept or something, whatever. Then maybe I'll squeeze in an extra cup of coffee. But that's about it.
There are a couple of times that I've been tempted, but once I got used to the fact that I wasn't having coffee and caffeine all the time, I haven't really missed it. And I actually mostly drink water at this point. I limit myself to 1 non-water drink per day.
Well, I like coffee, so straight up, so that's why I like drinking it. But
yeah, I never liked actual coffee. I would drink, the stuff that's so completely full of sugar that you can't actually taste the coffee anymore.
There's no sugar in my coffee.
Specifically, my drink was always the white chocolate mochas.
No.
And occasionally the peppermint mochas at Christmas.
That's not really fucking coffee. That's a sugary caffeinated drink.
Yes.
I mean, it might as well be a fucking soda. No, I have coffee. Okay, all right.
Except it was warm.
All right.
It was hot.
So, yeah. Well, anyway.
Let's move on. We got a whole bunch of events surrounding Snowden, and we got a whole bunch of events surrounding Egypt. Which one you want to hit first, Yvonne?
Snowden.
So, soon after we recorded our last show, we had... is Morales? This is the guy's name? President of
Evo Morales.
Evo Morales, president of Bolivia, was it?
Yes.
Flying home from Russia. His plane was, if you leave Russia, normally you fly over a number of Western European countries on the way to South America. Correct. And he was going to land to refuel in what, Spain or Portugal or something?
Actually, I understood that he wasn't. He didn't need a refueling stop.
Okay.
Okay. He was just. He may have wanted to stop over, but I thought
he was denied landing for refueling rights, as opposed to being denied flyover rights.
I understood the opposite. Okay. He was denied flyover rights. Period.
Probably.
And that's why he was forced to land.
Okay. So in any case, he was denied flyover rights from several countries. Spain, it was France, Portugal, Italy, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Spain as well, I believe.
I don't recall if Spain was, but I remember Portugal, France,
anyway,
Italy.
Enough countries.
Enough that he couldn't freaking get around.
Enough that he couldn't easily go around without having planned in advance to do so.
Correct.
And so he ended up landing in Austria. Was it?
Yes.
Austria. And then there's still, I've still to this day heard conflicting reports over whether or not the plane was inspected or searched to find whether or not Edward Snowden was on board. I've heard that from certain people saying it was searched, certain other people saying that they were not allowed to board the plane. But in any case, and I want to point out, by the way, that there are probably methods you could use to inspect the plane from the outside for I don't know, for at least some degree of certainty in terms of the number of people on board, right?
Yeah.
You know, infrared, blah, 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 whatever. You know, I could be wrong.
Listen, Snowden was not on board. Bottom line.
So anyway, everybody says they denied that Snowden was on board. In the end, everybody was convinced that Snowden was not on board. Eventually, the plane was allowed to continue on to its destination in Bolivia. However, and some of the countries that blocked it apologized. But this set off a huge diplomatic row. Because, of course, can you imagine, you know, Air Force One being grounded because a bunch of countries that had previously said, sure, you can fly through here, changed their minds at the last minute?
Well, wait a second. I never understood that they had given them permission to fly over advance.
Yeah, no, well, this was a standard flight plan that was filed going, you know, through here. I mean, this was routine stuff, right?
You know what? That's the thing that confuses me. I don't know. Because it seemed like that. I mean, you're not going through airspace and then requesting flyover rights and then denied.
Mm-hmm.
I that's why
you get all these permissions before you even took off?
Correct.
Right. So I assume they would have not taken off unless at the time they took off they had permission to go everywhere they needed to go. And
or unless they just thought, screw it, we're just going and whatever. We're, you know. They didn't realize all the rhetoric that he was talking and didn't think that anybody was going to stop him.
Well, I don't know, but I find that hard to believe. From my understanding, this was a completely routine flight back in terms of how all the paperwork was filed until they were told they couldn't continue.
Listen, let me tell you something. I mean, heads of state and military can be, you know, they just think that they can get away with a whole bunch of shit.
That's true. Okay? That's absolutely true.
However, you know what? So what the fuck am I filing a fucking flight plan? Why? Right? Okay. You know, I'll get permission as we go along, whatever. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
Because I've, you know, and all of a sudden they realize, oh shit, they're not letting us fly through.
So let me say, regardless of how that played out, there's the other part of it is that traditionally, you know, flights by heads of state, let's just say, flights by heads of state
are not stopped on a regular basis, this
is like an incredibly unusual situation for a flight by a head of state that essentially the plane has the same diplomatic status as an embassy.
Correct.
You know, is forced to land because, no, you can't go through here. That's highly, highly unusual. And it seems that this is because, you know, now all the dots have not been connected, but almost everybody seems to agree that basically, you know, the Americans probably threw up a flag that said, hey, we think Snowden might be on board. Don't let these guys pass. And so several of the American allies in Western Europe said, okay. And so the plane didn't go past. And, you know, the end result of this is you got, you know, you got a bunch of pissed off Latin Americans, basically. Right? I mean, you're familiar with this region. Tell me more.
I am. But listen, let me look. You got a whole bunch of people that are leveraging this as per usual as an opportunity to attack the U.S. The usual suspects that love to attack the U.S. The president of Argentina, Mrs. Kirchner, stupid bitch. She just, you know, she just loves to find any opportunity to go and, like, whatever, try to deflect attention from the fucking mess of a country that she's created. Correa, Morales, the idiot in Venezuela, all those morons. I mean, look, this is all... All this is just a publicity opportunity for them to be able to grab something and just go, oh, look at the imperialist Americans, as we always tell you, oh, they treat everybody, it's a fucking, you know, listen, they are the worst, listen, they are the most repressive, fucking intrusive, I mean, do everything, people, for God's sakes, they have no moral standing whatsoever to be criticizing anybody else on this of this department. So whatever. They took it's basically a nice publicity opening for them to do their propaganda bullshit, and that's all it is. And that's why they're using Snowden. Basically, Snowden has allowed himself to be now the biggest, you know, open publicity pawn for right-wing or ultra-left-wing, like, dictators now, basically to use them as some kind of a fucking, like, pawn to, you know, make themselves look like we're standing up to America. And let me tell you something. I don't think that any of these fucking people have any real intention whatsoever of giving him asylum. They're just
so
using
now several countries at this point have said, if he gets here, we will give him asylum.
Right, that's my point. If he gets here, yeah. And if the Martians arrive, we're going to fucking open up. We're going to have the red carpet out too. I mean, yeah, if the guy is stuck in the transit zone at fucking Sheremetyevo, okay, there is no fucking way to get him out. Honestly, the only way he's getting out of there right now is the fucking Russians go and get him out.
Well, no, there are plenty of ways if they want it. First of all,
yeah,
yes.
But listen to what they said. They said, if he gets here,
that's
how
true.
The fuck is he going to get there?
Whereas the way that if they really wanted to do it, they could send a chartered plane to the Russian airport,
right?
Include on it, issue a new passport for this guy with that country's name.
Or a temporary transport, temporary documents for him to travel with.
Issue temporary documents. If they wanted to really be safe about it, they could declare him, temporary ambassador to Russia or something.
Whatever.
So that he had diplomatic immunity, too.
Right. Or a consular employee or something like that.
Something
whatever.
Like that. Yes, they could declare him to be a consular employee of their mission in Moscow and grant him diplomatic immunity and take him in that way. So there are ways it could be done.
Right.
Now whether or not
they're not doing it,
whether or not the Russians would cooperate is another question. But
they're not doing it. None of them are. Okay, they're just using this. Like I said before, what he did right now is create himself as the biggest fucking publicity fucking stunt in history right now. And now every other fucking dictator and crazy and whacked up out there is using him for their own advantage. They have no interest in anything their governments are not like really appalled by any of this stuff because they do as much as they can of this themselves, if not more. And if they had the tools the NSA had, they would do like 10 times what we were doing. The bottom line is that this is all he's just a fucking publicity football at this point for these guys. That's all it is. So I don't know. I don't think that any of these guys have any intention of getting him out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
And we haven't heard that much new from him. We did have Glenn Greenwald tweeted that he had gotten a direct statement from Snowden that, in fact, those statements that we talked about last week that didn't quite sound like he probably wrote them himself, Snowden claims he did.
Okay.
In a conversation with Greenwald and, you know, in explanation of the grammar stuff and said, I've always had trouble with that kind of grammar and things like that and make those kinds of mistakes all the time. That's it. Just earlier on Monday, another video interview with Snowden was released, but it was actually the second part of the same interview that was released a couple weeks ago, so it's not new. It was recorded while he was still in Hong Kong. So we haven't heard much new from him himself, you know.
No.
So, and I guess, you know, what else is he going to do at this point? I mean, I guess
there's not much that he can do. I mean, what are his options? I don't know. I mean, if the Russians don't want to take him in, and nobody comes over there and gives him a travel document, what? I mean, his only option, honestly, realistically, is to give himself up to the U.S. That's about it.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it plays out.
He could just stay there indefinitely. I mean, it's not like it hasn't happened before.
And I don't know. I don't think we mentioned this last time, but At some point, I tweeted the link to this, and I believe you shared it as well, Yvonne. There was an article for somebody basically reviewing the part of the Russian hotel that he's staying at that's in the transit zone. And it didn't sound like the most fun place in the world. Just put it that way.
I doubt it. I mean, you know, I've been through those transit zones. I mean, it's not really meant for anybody to stay for an extended period of time. I mean, there's only really a space and time there for just somebody, say, you have a flight that you arrived one night and you're getting a flight the next morning. Right. That's it. That's really about the longest, okay, that it's really meant for anybody to be. And the guy's been there, I don't know, for weeks.
So anyway, he's having fun. On the issues that he actually talked about, I guess
nobody gives a fuck. You know, I mean, that's the problem. And that was like a problem I said.
Well, a couple new lawsuits moving forward based on these revolutions.
Yeah, whatever. Nobody gives a fuck. I mean, the public doesn't give a shit. I mean, go grab the paper. Do you think you grab any local paper? Go watch the regular any newscast. You think anybody's really giving a fuck? The average American give a fuck? No, they don't. I mean, that's the reality. And the problem with here's the other thing that I saw that I was reading week. This is an important point. A couple of people were mentioning that his hacking was so sophisticated, they so claim, that it escaped detection from anybody looking at it. So the point that I said before about the fact that if he wanted to remain anonymous and release the information that he could have, apparently everybody that's like examined it said that there was nobody really being able to figure out that he was able to go and like get all that information.
So now the one thing that did come out, and there was a New York Times article about this, was that his role... You know, when he first came out, everybody was describing him as sort of a low-level system administrator, blah, 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 blah. As more investigation has gone through, it seems like that's not really what was going on. He was hired specifically to do hacking of foreign infrastructure.
Yes, apparently they moved them. That was the one thing that he was originally working, if I understood correctly, in first in the defense of the NSA systems. So he was doing stuff in order to make sure that the systems were secure.
And then he moved on to offense.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So when he was talking about we've hacked into, Hong Kong universities and stuff, that information was firsthand experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't simply, a system administrator with whatever access. He was someone who was hired specifically for the expertise of breaking into systems undetected.
Right.
And so who knows exactly what he did or did not get access to and what the defenses are against that. There may well be plenty, but if you're hiring somebody specifically with those skill sets, you shouldn't be entirely surprised if they're able to break through some of your defenses. I mean, that's what his job is.
Right.
And his job was, like you said, originally his job was defending the systems. So he would have a roadmap of the defenses that exist for the system.
Yeah.
So anyway, just to your point, I looked on the current front page of the U.S. edition of CNN.com.
Yep.
We got Zimmerman trial.
Exactly.
We got the Asiana flight.
Right.
The third big story with a picture actually is Edward Snowden. But again, it's talking about the asylum options and he's in limbo and blah, blah, blah. It's not talking about the underlying issues at all.
About the underlying issues at all.
And then there are a bunch of headlines that don't have pictures, but I'm just going for the ones with pictures because, of course, that's what draws
the
eye.
That's the big stuff. Right.
And let's see. The next few are Spitzer to run against former madam. Tot dies after experimental surgery.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad. Watch school board meeting get ugly.
Right.
Remains of planes called miracles. Choir singer's heart beat as one. Really? Soldier dad surprises daughter at circus. Controversial celebrity deaths. Barbie reimagined with real dimensions, and A Day in the Life of a Porn Star. So, yeah. So this is where American attention really is. If they even bother for news at all, or international news at all, I know a lot of people who's, you know, they might check out the local news to see what the weather is, and that's about it.
Okay, so let's be more advanced. I'm going to the front page of The Economist, right?
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything about Snowden on here? Let's see. Escalating violence. Something about the steel industry, they're talking about extremists in West Africa, Egypt, Australian politics, immigration reform. Okay, the 10th headline is American espionage in Europe. The 10th one. Okay?
And just to complete the trifecta, the New York Times, nothing above the fold.
Right. I mean, nobody gives a fuck. Not one iota. They don't care.
And those that do care, as we've said before, generally are like, yeah, I guess the surveillance stuff's okay. If it keeps us safe, that's cool.
Right. I mean, we were against the surveillance law. Nobody gave a shit. It passed. Nobody cared.
Passed overwhelmingly.
Nobody cared. There
was like, you know, I don't have the exact margins in front of me, but this was one of those near unanimous where there was like a handful of senators and representatives who voted against.
And nobody fucking cared, okay? So, I don't know.
Anyway, Shall we move on and talk about Egypt after a break?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be back after this and talk about the land of the pyramids. Okay, here we are. So when last we met on this show, we were saying that the military had given a 48-hour ultimatum to President Morsi to reconcile with the opposition and the demonstrators or else, without specifying the or else. Morsi told them to go fuck themselves. And so then when the 48 hours ran out, They
pretty much went and freaking like grabbed him and arrested him and tossed him somewhere.
They grabbed him. They tossed him somewhere. He is officially, from what I understand, not under arrest, but he is no longer president and no longer free to do whatever he's doing. They suspended the Constitution and et cetera. They appointed somebody new as president. They appointed a new prime minister, a new vice president, et cetera, et cetera. Now, here's the interesting part of this. This is a situation where, on the one hand, you have a democratically elected president under a democratically ratified constitution who was overthrown by a military government. Overthrown by the military in what normally would be called a coup, and we'll talk about that in a second. But on the flip side, there seems to be fairly significant public support for this action.
Well, here's the problem, okay, that happened with this election and the way that it came down, okay? This election first had two rounds. They had a first round, they had a second round. In the first round, Morsi only got about a quarter of the vote. Okay.
Yeah.
And because he was one of the top two candidates and went into a runoff. And what happened in the runoff, because the non, whatchamacallit, religious extremist groups were very splintered, okay? They want the candidate that wound up second was a candidate that was basically from the previous regime, the Mubarak regime. And people were, like, at that point, they were kind of like, shit, man. I mean, we just went through all this to get rid of Mubarak, and now we're going to elect this guy that was, like, from his regime. And so a slight majority wound up voting for Morsi. Not because they liked them, okay?
But
basically because...
Yeah, by the way, just when you say slight majority, I just want to point out his margin of victory was greater than Obama's over Romney's. So, I mean, it's that's normal, right,
but
normal right. kind of margin for a democracy.
Normal kind of margin, and I'm saying, you know, which is like basically a margin. What I'm saying is it wasn't an overwhelming margin. It wasn't a 60-40 election, 70-30 yes. election that he went. No, it was a 52-48, 50, you know, that kind of a margin election where it wasn't an overwhelming margin. And a lot of people were very ambivalent about it and wound up voting for him, not because they liked him. It was because they didn't want to it was because the guy who wound up in the runoff going into the second round was an ex-Mubarak guy, and people were just not keen on putting the guy back, okay? But if you look at the first round results, 75% of the people voted for somebody else, okay? And that's the reality. And then you wind up with him in power, and then he winds up basically doing or abusing a lot of the shit that they threw out the other guy in the first place for.
A lot of this talk that's been happening is that he did a lot of moves that were perceived as anti-democratic, setting up the Constitution in such a way that it would be harder to lose a subsequent election, putting in all kinds of very conservative restraints and new laws, and putting his supporters and cronies in place in many positions. He was accused of ramming through the new Constitution without consulting with any of the opposition groups, saying, hey, here's what it is, that's it. It was put to a referendum and did pass, but there was a lot of controversy over how it was generated in the first place. So there are a lot of things where, he was clearly unpopular right. at this point. His ratings in the polls were falling, as they say, and clearly, you know, these marches in the streets wanted him out, and it looks like the majority of the Egyptian population was in favor of kicking him out, but of course the core group of his supporters were not,
right.
So you've got essentially a military coup that has a great deal of popular support. Now, part of the trick here, apparently, is that there is a U.S. law saying that if a democratically elected government is overthrown by a coup, American aid must end. And
right.
we give, I think it's $1.5 billion or so per year of aid to the Egyptian government.
And it's been there. It's been for a long time. Yep.
For many decades at this point. And so it certainly seems that under that law, we should be cutting off support at this point. But, you know, there's the whole, there's sort of hand-wringing on whether or not we end up using the term coup to describe it to try to get around this, because A, we didn't really like this guy all that much anyway. B, you know, the military might actually be better in terms of being a reliable supporter of U.S. interests in the region. See, if we gave up all funding to the region, we lose a lot of influence. So there's some controversy over here. To me, and also, by the way, I should mention that I've been reading a lot as well that the general Egyptian populace apparently has been blaming Obama for a lot of what happened with Morsi. Basically saying that, you know, Obama never took a stand. He never said anything negative against Morsi. Even now, there's this talk about potentially cutting off the aid, and it's basically coming across to the population of Egypt that the Americans have been supporting the radical Islamist president over the democratic movement in Egypt.
Ah, It's just we wind up with the rock in a hard place.
And of course, the impression before was we were supporting Mubarak up until the very end, which was true.
Listen, we try, and we're not very good at this. Okay, all right. I mean, but historically, I mean, what we try to do for the most part is try to support whoever has been elected, right?
Or whoever is
in power.
Yeah, whoever is in power. Let's be more generic.
Regardless of how they have arrived at power.
Right. We try to build a relationship with whatever government is in place to try to get the best mutually advantaged relationship for the United States specifically. And not a mutual advantage is nice, but what we really want is an advantage for us.
Correct.
You know, and we most likely will get better results in terms of the government of whatever country doing what we want if we're nice to them than if we're yelling at them all the time.
Correct.
And of course, we test that every once in a while, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, whatever. But, you know, but in a lot of these cases, it's basically been the attitude, and this goes back, you know, many, many, many decades, probably our entire damn history, where, you know, okay, he's a bastard, but if he's our bastard, that's okay.
Right.
And that's not necessarily, I think, the best.
Well, but the problem is, but what's the other option? The other option is like the Iraq option, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a bastard. Let's take him down and put in a democracy. How did that fucking work?
Well, I mean, and in this case, we got a democracy. We got the person who elected was an Islamist who is very conservative, fundamental, and was moving the country in that direction slowly but surely, and the people didn't like it. And so this is what you got. But nevertheless, I think, you know, I think if the law says we cut off aid, if it was a coup, we cut off aid because it was a coup. And, I mean, we could probably say something like, hey, as soon as your elections are in place, you get your money. As soon as the new elections happen, we'll be right back in business with you guys. But in the meantime, we got to bow out for a second. I mean, that's what our law says right now. And I'm a process hawk, even in these kinds of things. The guy was elected. They didn't like what he was doing. He had another couple years till the next election. I guess even 3 years. I think it was a 4-year term. You know, you suck it up until the next election, and then you try to vote them out. And then, by the way, if there are election irregularities, or it was determined not to be a free or fair election because of the way that he did blah, 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 then okay. Then all bets are off. You can have your revolution. But for the time being, you know, he was duly elected. Everybody, I mean, the election had the flaws that you just outlined and that we talked about at the time it happened. But everybody agrees that the election itself went the way it was supposed to go, and someone was elected, and there weren't a lot of irregularities. And so, you know, you suck it up and you let him have his 4 years and then you vote him out. I mean, that's how democracy is supposed to work. You can't just have a system that every time you don't like the guy, you have the military toss him out.
You can't.
You know, although that's tempting at times, I must say, and people have made the argument that says, you know, hey, the road to democracy is a bumpy one, and you have a lot of steps that you have to go through before you can have the kind of institutions that have developed in the United States and most of Western Europe, where across the board, essentially, in a lot of these countries for a lot of decades. Hey, you lose, you leave, you don't worry about it, you know, and you the whole peaceful transfer of power thing is a well-governed and well-established norm. That's not the case. This was the first democratic election ever in Egypt. So I have mixed feelings about it, but I think, you know, the process should have been followed. Now, part of the problem, of course, was the constitution that Morsi pushed through did not include any mechanisms for the early removal of a president. Like, the United States Constitution has the impeachment process if the president goes completely you know, does something illegal, or frankly, you know, it's unspecified what crimes and misdemeanors really means. So the House and Senate can decide whatever the fuck they want.
Basically, right. They could basically just because.
I mean, the U.S. Constitution has a couple different mechanisms. There's impeachment. There's removal for inability to carry out the office. And both of these are judgment calls by humans. So basically, there's a built-in mechanism in the U.S. Constitution that the cabinet and vice president could conspire and kick out the president anytime they feel like. And obviously, there are political consequences to it, and it's designed only to be used in exceptional circumstances. But the point is, there is a mechanism in place. There are a couple different mechanisms in place, actually, to remove a U.S. president. And, of course, they can resign. And apparently the constitution in Egypt that was in place up until a few days ago had no such mechanism. There was no mechanism where you could one way or another force a change other than through the election. And so the military did what it did because, you know, you had millions in the street asking for it. But, I mean, that's not democracy. That's mob rule. It's mob rule and military rule. And do I doubt, like, this guy was a scumbag. I didn't like him. I don't like his policies. I don't like the general sort of religious conservative attitude that he represented. But, you know, and maybe the guys who take over now and maybe the results of the next election, probably better. I don't know. But this is not the right way to go about it.
You see, the one thing is that here's the problem. I think that what the people in Egypt felt, and I mean, I don't like removing a president in this way, especially when there's a democratic election. But when the president goes and does, like, for example, like what Hugo Chavez did in Venezuela, which basically take the presidential power and basically change the constitution, change everything, change all the laws in order to ensure that you remain in power and that nobody can get on, repress all your opposition, make sure that nobody can get in, change everything so it's only favorable to your party. Okay? Then you know what? Then there's a certain line that you cross between solidifying yourself, you know, between you consolidating power and another one that's just basically you use the election basically just as a way of creating your own dictatorship. Right, and that's the problem.
And this is the argument that is made, of course, is that he was making those kinds of moves. I'm not sure that I've heard that he'd made enough of them that it was a de facto.
But I think people felt that was the direction he was.
People clearly felt that was the direction he was going. I'm not sure that he was actually there yet. Like that, if there was another election, he would be able to.
But I think, let's face it, Mubarak before supposedly was elected too, and basically created his own dictatorship.
Well, this is a pattern that has existed before. And when this happened, I thought to myself, I'm counting the minutes till the comparison is made. And literally within an hour or two, I saw tweets, you know, basically comparing the situation and saying, well, you know, Hitler was elected. And of course, then went through a whole bunch of things that made sure there was no more elections after that.
Yeah, but by the way, and Hitler, by the way, assumed power with almost the same percentage of support that, by the way, that Morsi had in the first round.
You know, and that's the kind of thing, and like I said before, if you get to the situation where it is clear that the person is shutting off all legitimate avenues for turning them out through the normal process, then things outside the process become more justifiable. I'm just not sure they were really there, but obviously a vast majority felt
it was.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
That's what it's. Yeah,
exactly. And so, so I wish them all luck. I mean, what's actually happening, of course, is there's starting to be violence in the streets, and you know what? I wish them luck in setting something up that, hey, they have another election, it magically works out, everything's cool, there's a new election, and somebody better comes up. But I'm afraid what's happening is not that. The military government that's come into place is putting in place all kinds of restrictions on the Muslim Brotherhood, who is Morsi's party and organization. They've arrested all kinds of people, including not just members of that party, but also journalists from Al Jazeera and other places. They shut down the television channels that were associated with that party. And there have been violent clashes in the street. I believe something like 40 or 50 people were killed yesterday and many more people injured through, you know, people who support Morsi versus people who support the coup clashing with each other in the streets. And, you know, the worry here is, of course, that this, you know, descends into chaos. And in fact, one of the major sites actually had that as their headline a little while ago. Egypt descends into chaos, and I forget which one it was. I was just flipping through, but you know that's not what you want to see. you don't want to see Egypt moving down the direction of like Assyria or something. That would be a huge disaster. And so hopefully that doesn't happen. But I mean, the first few days have not been auspicious.
Well, we'll see what the developments are and we'll see where it goes. I mean, I think at this point, you know, it's very early to tell. I mean, it's too early to tell. I mean, a couple of people are being appointed. Let's see what the moves are that they make. Let's see. I mean, they are promising that they're going to hold new elections.
I believe they just set the date for February, next February.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, obviously, I mean, and I really believe them in that sense. Listen, even Barack went down, they didn't go like, wait, they did hold a new election. Let's see what the steps they are to take to have the new election. Hopefully, I think that what the parties need to do and understanding what happened before is not get so splintered in the way that they were, that they try to like arrive at some common consensus at who the candidates are going to put up instead of having the situation happen in the last round. And maybe we won't get a repeat of the same situation we had now.
And that would be interesting, but I worry that the actual thing is that they're going to ban the Muslim Brotherhood from even participating. They're going to be squelching that opposition. They're going to be throwing those people in jail, blah, 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 and basically repressing that point of view. And then someone else will win, and maybe we'll like the someone else better. But the cost is driving that kind of organization underground where it'll be even more dangerous.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. Okay, but, you know, currently the reality is that if you take a look at from what I, you know, what we've seen, the vast majority of people in the country were for this. This wasn't like, a violent minority that just seized power. This was the opposite. This is what it seems is like a large majority that just were fed up and said, we can't continue like this. And basically, the military went and like acquiesced to the wishes of what the vast majority of the country is. We'll see if how it develops. So,
yeah, we will. Okay, we're just about done here. A couple quick things to close up. You have any? I know you're. We always talk to you whenever something happens with airlines. Any thoughts on the plane crash in San Francisco?
Well, I mean. I mean, the pilot's just completely fucked up. I mean, there's nothing. Listen, I heard the story first, and as soon as I heard it and I heard what people said, I said, these morons stalled the plane before they got to the runway. And now that all the evidence came out, that's exactly what happened. I don't know what the hell these morons were doing.
I've seen at least a couple reports that some of the navigational beacons were not
set. It doesn't matter. Had an issue as well. They were on a visual approach. Yep. Yes. The ILS was down. Yes. Okay. But it doesn't matter. Okay. All right. I mean, the weather was perfectly clear. It was an easy enough landing. You had a minimum speed that you have to achieve. The reason why the plane stalled was not because of the failure of the ILS.
Right.
The reason was because they went their approach speed was way too slow. They apparently shut off the autopilot at some point and either didn't have the throttle set right or didn't have the auto throttle set or something. And the plane went on idle and the speed dropped to like about 100 knots, which was substantially well below how fast they should have been going. And even though there were alerts that this happened, they didn't apply full go-around power until way too late. Okay. And what the pilot did at the last moment, when he saw there was too low, unfortunately, he did the wrong reaction, where apparently he tried to fucking pull the nose way too far up, in order to not hit the end of the runway. And what he wound up doing was pulling the nose up so far up that the tail of the plane struck the seawall and broke the plane apart.
Was he low enough that if he hadn't done that, the nose would have hit the seawall instead?
No, I think that he probably would have just – the nose would have hit the runway. He would have come in maybe nose first, which is not the most ideal landing. I will tell you that when I was learning to fly, I did that a couple of times. It wasn't great, but it was a landing. Okay. Did it when I was learning. It wasn't catastrophic, okay, but it was a landing.
The
problem is it's just a basic error of not maintaining enough speed on an approach, period. You got two fucking qualified pilots. You're going in, and I don't know how the hell you don't go and watch your speed, because it's one of the most important things you're watching when you're fucking coming in, and they didn't watch your speed. They went, they slowed it down so much that all of a sudden when they realized that they stalled the plane. So, there's no good excuse for it. It doesn't matter what – I mean, the ILS, all it does is set the glide slope so you are on the right path to the landing, okay? Now, if you are going and like – I mean, look, the 777 is smart enough that the ILS is working. All you got to do is hit a fucking button and it puts you on the runway. I mean, the only difference between what they had and this was that they had to – they were doing this on some manual control, but there's no reason to have been flying that slow. Okay. And it just means that somebody just was not watching what they were supposed to be doing. There's very few things. I mean, look, they already had full flaps set. They have the landing gear down. So all you're doing at this point is like, pointing your nose at the runway and watching your fucking speed. Those are the only two things you're doing. And if you're not watching your fucking speed, I don't know what the hell you're doing on a landing. That's the most important thing. So I don't know. I mean, it still baffles me. They just fucked up. But, you know, the thing is that you're talking a little bit about history. Like, the Korean Airlines have had a history of, like, having, like, these kinds of like mishaps. They kept talking about like about 15 years ago there was a 747 that crashed short of a runway in Guam where the ILS locator was out of service, okay, for some repairs. And the frickin' captain, they were like, the captain of the plane kept insisting the ILS was working. He had the co-pilot and the flight engineer tell him, no, it's not working. He kept arguing it was. He supposedly found a frequency, and he fucking crashed the damn plane into a mountain, okay? So I don't know. What the heck were these guys doing? I have no idea why. I mean, it really – this is just something – that just on a modern aircraft with the kind of people you had on board doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense.
The other thing to note about this is, of course, you know, the world we live in now. A few minutes after this, someone tweeted from, you know, and it was actually an executive at Samsung, I believe.
There was an executive at Samsung that was tweeting.
On Twitter, at Euner, EUNNER, and he tweets, "I just crash landed at SFO, tail ripped off. Most everyone seems fine. I'm okay. Surreal." Along with a picture taken from his smartphone, you know, from, you know, 100 feet away from the burning right. plane or whatever, with, right. with people stumbling around trying to get out of the plane. And
yeah.
It's like, wow. And then, of course, someone else posted it, and this is from at Big Chaz posted this. "Step one, escape burning aircraft. Step two, run 20 feet. Step three, take pick. step four, think about filter choice. Step five, post to Instagram." You know, and I have to admit, you know, if I had successfully survived a plane crash in an uninjured way and was running away from it.
I would have taken a picture too.
I'd probably do the same damn thing.
Yeah, I would have taken a picture too. If I got my phone and I survived the plane crash, yes, I'm snapping a pic. Okay,
now,
all right.
Now, of course, you know, initial reports were that everybody survived. It turns out two dead and a whole bunch of people very severely injured.
Very severely injured, yeah, unfortunately. I mean, the plane really hit that seawall hard. I mean, it wasn't, you know... Like, this is only the second time a 777 has crashed, okay? The last time was a British Airways plane was on final, and the engines, like, choked, okay, like, on final, and it was because of ice crystals forming on a part of the engine that got redesigned on the used Pratt. Actually, I was checking to see that this plane did use the same engines as Pratt & Whitney's, but they were retrofitted with that repair. So I was like thinking that maybe that was the problem, but no, it starved and the BA pilot like put it down. As I was mentioning, he just kept it there. Look, I'm just going to put it down and whatever. You don't, I'm not going to fucking pull up the nose and stall it. No, we'll just put it down as it is. It is what it is. Okay? And everybody walked away. Everybody was fine. But this pilot, unfortunately, went and that was, you know, when you were like at that low an altitude, you could go and like put throttle up. But if you pull the nose at that low a speed, all you're going to do is nothing good is going to come of that. Nothing. You know? So,
okay. So one other disaster to just mention real quickly, there was a train crash in Lac-Mégantic, Quebec. And this is one where apparently the train was parked for the night. Somebody, I don't know, they haven't said specifically yet, but somehow the train got loose.
Apparently he didn't set the parking.
I mean, that's pretty much the only explanation. Somebody didn't set the brakes. Someone decoupled something that was supposed to be coupled together. Whatever. The train was full of, I guess it was it crude oil?
Crude oil.
Anyway, it went down the hill, and then it got to the center of town, and I guess there was a curve or something. The train derailed. It exploded.
Boom.
And the only thing I want to mention on this, it obviously a tragedy. I think there's like 20 people dead or so at this point, and more
bad.
Still missing. So that's probably going to rise. But I will mention that I used to have this thing. Unfortunately, I haven't done it in a long, long time. Where I did random trips, where I'd select a random spot on Earth and end up going to it as a mini vacation or a full vacation, depending. And the town of Lac-Mégantic, Quebec, was actually the place I went on one of these random vacations in late 1998. So you can actually look on my website. If you go to abelsmay.com and hit the trips section, and then click on the one for Lac-Mégantic, Quebec, it's listed as 1998 Q4 Lac-Mégantic, Quebec, Canada. You can see the brief trip report. This was actually only one of the very first I did, and I didn't write something up contemporaneously, but ended up posting something my mother had written, which she went with me on this particular trip, outlining our trip. There's not too much about the actual town itself, but it was a nice little town. We stayed in a bed and breakfast there, and
who was we? Who did you go with?
My mother. I had mentioned that like 30 seconds ago. But anyway, it was a nice little town. So it's very sort like some of the buildings in the pictures on my post probably don't exist anymore. Feel sorry for that town, but have a little bit of a connection there, and it's a shame. Anyway, I think that's a show.
All right. Well, thanks everybody. We talked again for I don't know a long time again.
A long thanks time again.
Yeah,
that's what we do. Yeah. And of course, there are all kinds of issues we haven't talked about. Who knows if we'll ever get to them? A couple weeks ago, Obama did a speech on climate change. We haven't talked about that at all.
There was a whole
rigmarole going on about an abortion law in Texas. We haven't talked about that at all.
Rick Perry decided not to run.
At least not for governor. Who knows?
Not for
have
governor.
Other plans.
Hell yeah, he was such a great presidential candidate.
Hey, second time's a charm, I hear.
Yeah.
This whole Trayvon Martin thing has been going on. I can't bring myself to care too much.
I
feel sorry for the whole situation, but in the end, it's tragic. It's one situation. the overall level of import is low, unfortunately. So,
well, you know, it's like we said, you know, we're talking about, right, okay, look, I know we talked about how news gets importance, right? Okay. Listen, I'm sure that on America's roads, more than 2 people died and more than 100 people got injured.
Yep.
We don't pay attention to that. However, the spectacular plane crash in San Francisco Airport, we do.
And since you bring that up, I mean, I rail about that every time because it's it gives you a false impression because you pay so much attention to this. And like a dozen places have, of course, posted how much safer airline travel is than traveling on the roads. And these, it's tragic that these 2 people were killed in the plane and these other people were injured. But you have a greater chance of being injured or killed
on the way to
driving back and forth to work every day.
Damn straight. That's exactly right.
So. Anyway, that's it. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts. You can tweet me or Yvonne. I'm at abelsmay. Yvonne is at IamBo. And we welcome your questions, comments, and thoughts. And tell your friends and tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You sound more like McLaughlin there.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Oh, jeez.
Later, Yvonne.
Bye-bye.
I'm looking for the button to hang up, and I can't find the damn thing. So you better hang up.
All right. Oh, I got it. So, here it is.